Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Last Monday was dubbed National Divorce Day, kind of an unofficial holiday that commemorates the fact that January is notoriously the month where people get divorced and they initiate the process. Statistics are out there that approximately 50% of all couples will eventually get divorced in this country. We're the sixth highest rate of divorce as far as countries go, and everybody has either been through the experience or know a loved one or friend who has been through it. So we're going to talk today about issues relating to divorce, custody, which is a word we don't use anymore, and how to really stay out of the conflict that a broken marriage can create. And with us in studio today is one of my favorite practitioners here in Chicago. She's wise. She's bright. She was a seasoned family law lawyer at a top firm in Chicago, and now she does mediation solely in the family law realm. She's the founder of Jacobson Mediation Group in Chicago. Welcome, Alex Jacobson. I'm so glad to see you.
Karen, thanks for having me.
Happy New Year. I can
Happy
still
New
say
Year
it.
To you as well.
I say it all the way to Valentine's Day, and then we're done.
Sounds like a good rule of thumb. That's,
yes. Hey, you know, this January thing, it's funny. I think last week I signed up four new family law cases. And so it is true. January is a month where you see a lot of movement when it comes to people making the decision to finally get a divorce. Why do you think it's January?
It's very true. And I think it's because people spend the holidays with their family, they're traveling, they're in high stress situations. And I think it causes people to take a moment, take a breath and say, this isn't working. This isn't good for me. This isn't good for my children. And I'm not doing it again next year. It's a New Year's resolution and a new way to start off the year, begin the process and get things moving for a better year ahead.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, you have practiced in family law. You mediate the conflicts involved in getting a divorce. And I read these studies that show the top causes of divorce: lack of commitment, infidelity, conflict, meaning arguing, and breakdown of communications, financial problems. In practice, do you have a different theory on that, or do you think that's pretty accurate?
I think those are all very accurate reasons. I think the reality of the situation is people get married at 28, 29, 30. What's important at that time maybe shifts when you're 40, 45. Life throws many curveballs, illness, financial woes, tragedy, and you don't know how you're going to handle those circumstances, and you don't know how you're going to handle them as partners. And sometimes that causes people to just go into different directions, and it's nobody's fault. It's just that people grow apart.
I agree. And, you know, people talk about infidelity and people talk about domestic violence being issues that are the reason for divorce. And certainly those are definitely, you know, involved. But I feel like those are like the last straw that broke the camel's back, that, you know, that infidelity might be, you know, a symptom of some underlying conditions and that there were problems in the marriage before the infidelity. Again, you know, every case is very different. We're here with Alex Jacobson. She has a mediation firm here in the city. I use your firm when I have conflicting partners who might want to mediate, and we're going to talk a little bit about that process. But if anyone has any questions, we both know family law, and if you have a question about a case that maybe you're involved in or someone that you know is involved in or just curious about issues relating to a divorce, children, and all of those issues, give us a call here, 312-981-7200, or text to that same number, 312-981-7200. So what do you recommend, Alex, if parties are married and they're not getting along? Do you recommend that they engage in some sort of family law, family therapy or marriage counseling before they embark on the divorce process?
I do. I think that people want to make sure that they have attempted everything possible to salvage their marriage. And oftentimes, you know, going to marriage counseling, identifying the communication issues could perhaps mend a marriage. And if not, then you've at least given it your all. before beginning the divorce process.
So many people put off getting a divorce, and I know that you know this. Sometimes people call me and then I don't hear from them for 2 years. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I have to get divorced now. And, you know, people don't want to change, right? Is there some wisdom one way or the other? If your marriage is irretrievably broken, should you move quickly on getting a divorce, or is there any good reason to delay?
I think it depends on your circumstances. It depends on where your kids are. It depends on the time of year. Are your kids having, you know, going to summer camp, so that that could perhaps be a good break to begin the process where they aren't around? Are there family occasions coming up that might be better suited with you living separate? I think it just depends on the circumstance as to whether you proceed quickly or slowly, or if the circumstance is such that you just need to sever ties as quickly as possible.
Let's, before we take a break, I want to just maybe if you could bullet point some things that people should do in preparation for getting a divorce. So say you're in a marriage that you know is not going to end well, and that you're going to have to file for divorce at some point in time. What are some of the things that a person should be doing?
I think it's really important to start out by getting your team together. I think you need to, we're the day after the Bears game, you need to get your quarterback in line. Your quarterback is your attorney who's going to provide the strategy for your process. To the extent that you need any financial advisors involved, making sure you have them lined up so that you understand your financial circumstances and can make wise financial decisions. Perhaps you need child psychologists lined up for your kids, so to help them work through the process. It's making sure that you have all of your people in line to begin the process in a wholesome way.
Yeah, those are all really good pieces of advice. I'm going to add one more to that, and I would think maybe a support group. And when I say a support group, I don't mean anything formal, but it is an emotional process, and it is a difficult process, and a lot of decisions need to be made that will affect your future and that of your children. And I always tell people, is it your family members? Do you have a best friend? Do you have someone who you can lean on, whether it's a pastor or someone who can give you good advice to keep your head on right? Because your divorce lawyer should not be your therapist and should not be the person who supports you emotionally.
Well, first of all, that would become very expensive.
Yes, right. Exactly.
but also, it's important to have an objective voice, I agree with you, to help you get out of the emotional state, identify the issues, and help you make the best decisions for you. Ultimately, you are the decision maker, but having somebody help you talk through the various options is really helpful.
Let's talk a little bit about, people don't understand really what the process is, you know, that it is really a lawsuit. Can you tell our listeners generally how a divorce works if it's going to go through the court process?
Generally speaking, there's an initial document that's filed that basically informs the court, these are our names, these are our kids' names, we are getting divorced. It's pretty vanilla notice to the court. And then the process begins of financial discovery, you know, identifying what issues need to be resolved to disentangle this couple from both a parenting perspective as well as a financial perspective. You engage your lawyers. Perhaps there is some motion practice. Perhaps you're getting the judge to weigh in on particular issues that you're unable to resolve. And very rarely, but ultimately in some circumstances, there are trials.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen very often in family. I think it's maybe somewhere 4 or 5% of all cases go to trial, or maybe on one issue or two issues. But these things largely get resolved, and there are laws that are on the books that basically guide you through some of these things. Now, issues of how you'd spend time with your children are not so much guided by the statutes, but child support and spousal support, there's some parameters that get applied. So those are issues that can be resolved, I would say, a little bit easier than some of the other ones.
A little less gray when you're applying guidelines.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to give out the number here. If you have a question about family law, 312-981-7200. I've talked to mediators on the show before, but can you tell our listeners what mediation is and what it isn't, what a mediator is allowed to do and decide or not decide, and then what is the process like?
My role is to help people get through the divorce process in the most seamless way possible outside of court. Sometimes a mediation will involve attorneys and the litigants. Sometimes it involves just the parties themselves. But my role is to talk through the issues, understand from each party's perspective, what are their goals? What's important to them? What are they concerned about? And then help them create an agreement that's workable and tailored to their family, both from a parenting perspective as well as financial. As a mediator, I don't tell people what to do, but the backdrop of everything that we talk about is what is a likely outcome in court, and I help guide them through the process to come up with a workable arrangement that is informed by the result of what a court process would be.
Do you think that every family law case that is not resolvable immediately because the issues, let's say, are very simple, do you think that mediation is good for almost any family law case?
Selfishly, I do think so. Number one, parenting matters. You have to attempt mediation before going to court. But number two, mediation isn't just for people who need a little help dotting I's and crossing T's to reach an agreement. It can often be for high conflict, financially complex, or really sticky child-related issues. But it is an opportunity that you can craft an agreement that is tailored to the needs of that family. And so it, from my perspective, provides a better way to resolve your family law issues as opposed to a judge who, quite frankly, doesn't have the time or the creativity to work with a family in a way that is needed to create a unique agreement for that family.
I always say to my clients who may not want to mediate for one reason or another, you know, any agreement that you make, no matter how skewed it is, that, you know, don't quite like the whole thing, it's going to be better than the person in the robe making the decision.
Absolutely.
Because that person has different slants of life, has different prejudices. And like you said, doesn't, how can a judge who maybe has 400, 500, 600 cases, I don't know if it's that many these days, but that's a lot of cases. They don't know your case. They don't know your family. They don't know your kids. They don't know their special needs. They don't know the personality. So you're going to get a really bad result in most of these cases when it comes to the children, at least. You know,
exactly. I mean, you know, you think about the various shapes and sizes that families come in. You've got children with special needs. You've got children who are superstar athletes. You've got, you know, many different needs, parents who travel. So trying to craft an agreement, a parenting agreement that is workable for that family needs to take into consideration all of those factors. And it can be complicated. You have the opportunity in mediation to create that agreement for your family.
So let's just take kind of an example, which is a typical issue that arises. Hey, you know, there's a family, mom says, I want the kids every Christmas because they unwrap the gifts and they celebrate with my extended family. And dad says, well, you know, we don't really have extended family, but I still want to be part of that unwrapping of presents. And I want Christmas Day every year. So how do you talk to the parties and get them to reach some sort of consensus?
So again, the backdrop of what we talk about is what is a likely outcome in court, and typically holidays are going to be alternated year to year. But hearing that sounds so black and white, and for somebody who has an emotional attachment to a particular holiday, that may not resonate with them, that they're going to every other year have Christmas. So I try to encourage people to think about opportunities for new traditions. It's your family is now changing form. Perhaps Christmas Eve as opposed to Christmas Day in alternating years becomes a new tradition for you and for your family that will have a positive impact on your children.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing about change. You know, people can have a hard time sometimes of visualizing what it's, I mean, they are dealing with a bad situation, a high conflict marriage and maybe arguing going on and some bad things, but they can't see through to what the future could look like because they're so involved in that cloud of conflict. And I think that's really smart when you start sketching out some possibilities and then it becomes reality and then they can buy into it.
Exactly. I mean, help people understand that perhaps they will have another significant other down the road who may have a different importance on Christmas Eve as opposed to Christmas Day. So having the opportunity to alternate holidays is then becomes a good thing as opposed to being blocked into only Christmas every year.
Right, right. I want to talk a little bit about 50-50, because those are the words that we hear all the time. I want 50-50 parenting time. It's only fair for me to get 50-50 because I'm a parent. How do you approach that, that sort of attitude?
So I want to understand what historically has happened in this particular family. How have the kids typically been handled? And what impediments may there be for both parents having that amount of time with the kids? But when a parent is saying to me, I want 50-50, it's fair to me, I want to understand what's fair to the kids. How are the kids going to get to and from school every day and to and from their activities? And what would an equal parenting schedule negatively impact them? Would it positively impact them? Would it provide an opportunity for a kind of relationship with one of the parents that they didn't have the opportunity to have previously? I want to understand the entire background. And perhaps an equal parenting schedule is appropriate. Perhaps it's not.
Yeah, and when people start counting hours, I think to myself, there's quality time, and then there's, you know, hours, you know, and I think that's really, really good advice. Do you see that in the court system there is a presumption that women are better off taking care of the children? There used to be a legal presumption of that. That's gone. It's been gone for years. But do you still think that there is some prejudice against dads spending time with their kids?
Very much less so than when I started practicing. You know, I think that dads are equally involved in many circumstances. So, you know, that prejudice that existed in the 70s, 80s, and perhaps early 90s isn't so heavily relied upon anymore.
Yeah, and I think dads feel that that is the case. And I think, you know, the mothers always say, we don't get enough money. And there's always those comments and those ideas that the system is not fair. But I think it is much fairer than it has been in the past. And those presumptions, and you've got a lot of male judges and female judges who think that 50-50 is a good thing, just to start out with, unless there's some other factors that play into it. Couple of fun facts here. Duration of the average marriage, 7.8 years. Highest divorce rate among professions, dancers and bartenders. I'm not going to go into that at all. The lowest is farmers, podiatrists, and clergy. No idea about that. The highest divorce rates are in Nevada and West Virginia, and the lowest, this is going to surprise you, Iowa and Illinois.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would have thought maybe Utah for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, and women initiate a divorce in over 70% of the occasions. So very interesting. Give us a call here if you have a question for Alex or for me in the family law realm, 312-981-7200. We have a texter from 708. Is forensic accounting always successful in finding money that a spouse has hidden, and how expensive is it? So why don't you back up a little bit, Alex, and talk a little bit about the process of disclosing assets and what you think, what you can do if you think your spouse is hiding money.
So at the beginning of every case, each party fills out what's called a financial affidavit, which discloses to each other, to the attorneys, to the court, what your respective income, expenses, assets, and liabilities are. And there are circumstances when you receive your spouse's financial affidavit and have the concern of, wait a second, I'm not believing that this is all that exists. And so then you can engage a financial neutral, perhaps a forensic accountant, to do the digging for you. It is a very time-consuming, expensive, and not always successful process, but it can be in terms of discovering assets, in terms of, you know, where certain account transfers have gone to or from. That's what they're hired to do. But it's not always successful.
No, I agree. Because if someone wants to hide money and has been doing it for years, you may never see it. Now, if someone took money out of an account recently, you don't even have to show where it went. I mean, they have to account for it. So to that extent, you know, I always encourage my clients to look at the bank statements. Look at the bank. You know better what is a legitimate expense, and where, if money is going to some other account that you don't know about, then at least you know that there is another account.
And I also think it's important for people to understand when they're considering the divorce process. When you're in a marriage, there's a certain partnership that works. Perhaps one person is in charge of the finances and the other has no idea what the budget is, where the checks are written from. That's okay. The divorce process, your lawyer, your quarterback will help you work through the process so that you can get that financial disclosure and feel informed working through the process.
And I would say, and you probably will agree, that if you get somebody a neutral, and when we say a neutral, that maybe both parties agree to the same person, so you don't have dueling accountants. And then you split the cost of that, and it, even though it is very expensive to get a good forensic accountant, it's probably cheaper in the long run than having the lawyers both do the math and go through the documents, and they're not as good at it
exactly
as the accountants really, really are. One of the things I wanted to talk about is, you know, back in the old days, you know, the typical family situation was a woman would stop her job and take care of the children until they were raised. And then when a divorce happened, you know, there was a spousal support. Tell us what advice you have to people who are married, and for men or women, because you're seeing many more men now stay home with children. Is there still a peril, and how do the courts treat a spouse who has chosen to stay at home with children if there is a divorce?
So when a court is assessing whether spousal support is appropriate, among the many factors that they consider is whether a person has taken a step back from his or her career in order to help raise kids. You know, when you are getting divorced, another component of the spousal support consideration is how long were you married, in terms of how long your support may or may not be. If you are making the decision to take a step back from your career, that is a potential risk. But if you are communicating well with your spouse, it's something that should be talked about to understand that, you know, if you are a young associate at a law firm, for example, and you're on the partnership track, taking a step back from that could have real lasting impact on your career.
I always tell men and women that it's always a good idea, even if you do want to be a full-time stay-at-home parent, which I think is a laudable goal and something that, you know, is a wonderful thing to be able to do, to always kind of keep your foot in the door, whether it's through networking and contacts or doing some part-time work or keeping up on, you know, the latest technology in your field, so that if and when you need to go back, because the judge might say, you know, your spousal support is only going to be so much, and you realize I can't support myself, you might need to get back into that job to support yourself, not only yourself, but your children.
Exactly. And also, it's just good mental gymnastics to keep you,
sure,
you know, in the game.
Let's talk about the house. That's really one of the questions that I get asked a lot. You know, you've got a house and people are very emotionally attached to their home. Their children are there. Their children have their stuff. The children are accustomed to their homes. How do you negotiate and mediate that very, very hotbed issue?
So, you know, again, sort of like the opportunity for new tradition with holidays, I ask people to take a long, hard look at their house. Where is it located? Is it close to school? Should the parent who's going to be primarily responsible for taking the kids to and from school be the one to stay in the house? Can that parent afford the house? Is this just bricks and mortar that you are emotionally attached to, that perhaps downsizing might actually be better for your family? Is it actually a good thing for your kids to start fresh in a new home outside of the former marital residence? There are pros and cons of keeping and, you know, getting rid of the house. But at the heart of it all, it's going to be a financial consideration as to who can afford it.
Absolutely. And I think that's the point where you have your clients do homework. You know, look at, can you assume this mortgage with what you're making and what you might be getting in support? And I always tell them, go look at a downsize. Maybe a townhouse, it will be better for you because you don't have to go out and shovel the snow, and you maybe have a swimming pool in the facility. So when people start to think of alternatives, I think they start to say, okay, I can give up what I have because I have something else that I'm interested in.
Exactly. And again, it's the opportunity for a fresh start. that can be good for kids when they are learning to live in two separate households.
One last question, Alex, and then we have to go. I how do you tell children about it, you're getting divorced? Should one parent do it? Should both parents do it? How do you advise parties to tell their children about what's going on?
It's most definitely not a one-size-fits-all answer to that question. And I think doing your homework before sharing it with the kids, talking to the children's therapist, or even just engaging a child psychologist to share the circumstances and get a professional's feedback on how to best explain to the kids, depending on their ages, depending on how long the marriage has been, depending on their emotional maturity.
And, you know, I think kids really have very basic questions sometimes, like, do I still have my room? Am I still going to have my friend Johnny? You know, so that those kinds of assurances are really important. And I think some children will think that maybe they were the cause of it for some reason and take that blame on themselves. And I always tell my clients, you know, make sure they understand that they have nothing to do with this. It's just mom and dad are not good friends anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. Alex Jacobson, thank you so much for joining us here. Alex Jacobson has a mediation firm here in Chicago. I highly recommend it. How would people reach you, Alex?
JacobsonMediationGroup.com is the website.
And thank you for coming in studio. Have a great new year. Go
Bears.
Thank
you, Karen.